Welcome, everyone. This is Tom Peters in real life, Maxito Ricardo in Second Life, and I want to welcome you all to the first ever Slimposium. Today is Saturday, November 8th, 2008. This Slimposium is being sponsored by the ALA-VCL-MIG, the Virtual Communities and Libraries Member Initiative Group. You're certainly welcome to join the MIG, or better yet, start your own MIG. ALA has a little-known aspect to it that enables, if you get 100 qualified, bona fide signatures, you can start your own MIG on any topic that you want. So we're very pleased to have ALA help sponsor today's event. I want to especially thank Christina Coleman, Valerie Hawkins, and Donovan Villa at ALA for their help in making this possible. I also want to thank Lori Bell and Sonia Morgan for helping to plan and organize this event. And, of course, Gabrielle Real and Real Radio for streaming and recording the audio. And last but not least, I want to thank all of you for taking time out of your busy schedules on a Saturday, no less, to attend and participate in today's symposium. I just have to get this off my chest, too. I was involved in coming up with the name Slimposium, but every time I read it or say it, I always think we're in some kind of a weight loss seminar, and it makes me hungry. So I don't know whether it's breakfast time or lunch time or dinner time where you are. We have some friends in Europe and the UK and North Africa and Australia and other places around the world. So welcome to today's symposium. We have a full schedule. We're going to have 2 hours of rapid half-hour presentations from a wide variety of people representing different types of library initiatives in Second Life. And then we're going to take a one-hour break and come back for another 90 minutes of presentations and discussions. What we hope to do today is provide a glimpse of all the amazing things that libraries and library-related organizations are doing in Second Life. Now, we're fully aware that Second Life is just one of dozens, over 100 virtual worlds in existence already, with more being planned. Next spring, the ALA-VCL-MIG plans to have another symposium that will focus on what libraries are doing in other virtual worlds. So if you're wondering why we're all focused on Second Life and Team Second Life today, that's by design. We wanted to, because there's so much activity in Second Life, we wanted to try to focus today on Second Life and Team Second Life library-related activities. And then in the spring, we'll talk about what's going on in other virtual worlds vis-a-vis libraries. As you probably know, there's a huge literature on virtual worlds and virtual world librarianship. But let me just mention a couple of items that were just published, shamelessly mentioned, because I was involved a little bit in both of them, that may be of interest to you. The first is a book that was just published called Virtual Worlds, Real Libraries, Librarians and Educators in Second Life and Other Multi-User Virtual Environments, edited by Lori Bell and Rhonda B. Truman. So it's a collection of contributed chapters about the various aspects of what's going on, and many of the speakers today are also contributors to that volume. And then I was the author of a recently published what's called Library Technology Reports, published by ALA TechSource, a publishing unit of the American Library Association, called Librarianship in Virtual Worlds. It's volume number 44, issue 7 of the October 2008 issue. And so those two publications might give you a better sense of what's going on with virtual worlds and libraries beyond what you're going to hear today. So with that out of the way, kind of welcomes and introductions, hopefully everybody's getting settled in. You've got sound and things like that. And I'm just checking here, checking the text chat. I'll try to monitor the text chat during my talk, and I'm also going to serve as the master of ceremonies throughout the day. So I'll try to, if you want to text chat questions or comments to the speaker or presenter, we'll try to address as many of those as we can. We're going to try to stay on schedule. So we've got basically about 25 minutes for each presentation and discussion with a little break in between, a little few-minute break, and then we'll have that hour-long break after we do this for 2 hours. So we're going to try to stay on schedule. Okay, so let me give you some ideas to kind of get us started today. And there's just so many things about virtual worlds and libraries that we can't cover them all, and we'd have to have a course or a, a whole curriculum on this, but let me talk about some of the things that I find interesting about Second Life in particular and virtual worlds in general as they relate to libraries and library-related organizations. First, let me begin with some beliefs, a little bit of history, and a slow wisdom of crowds. I firmly believe that virtual worlds, virtual environments, MOOCs, multi-user virtual environments, whatever we're going to end up calling them, are here to stay. I think that the advantages of these virtual environments are just so great that we are going to be living with these things and using these things from here on out. I think virtual environments are good for learning. They're great for immersive experiences. They're great for a lot of different types of work. They're wonderful for group activities. And last but not least, they're wonderful places to have fun. And one of the things that I find fascinating about virtual environments and games, online games and things like that, is that we are starting to see, I think, a different way that we relate to having fun. And here's kind of a thumbnail sketch. I think in the modern era, fun sort of got put on a pedestal. If you worked hard, if you studied hard, if you did that grunt work, which is unfun, then fun was the reward. And maybe the quintessential image of that is after the quarterback of the winning Super Bowl team is running off the field and he's all muddied and bloodied and he's been through a real tough struggle, and then they ask him, where are you going? He says, I'm going to Disney World. I think that's a quintessential image of if you work hard, you can then have fun afterward. But I think that's the typical industrial way that we've dealt with fun. I think as we move into the post-industrial era, we're seeing that fun is integrated back into work and learning so that it's an integral part of what's going on here. And so when you come into Second Life, you realize that having fun is an integral part of that experience, even though you might be primarily working or learning. I think virtual environments also are cheaper, greener, and more efficient than similar real-life activities. And there's been a lot of discussion about how green Second Life and virtual environments really are. I've heard some estimates that your avatar expends nearly 50% of the energy that you expend as a carbon-based creature in real life. So there's some interesting aspects going on there. I think also virtual environments provide some of the comforts of the familiar 3D built environments with some unique twists. For example, you can fly in Second Life, and you can stay underwater indefinitely. And the built environment is very malleable, so that once you build it, you don't think like with a building in real life, you think, well, once it's built, it's pretty much there, and you can tweak it a little bit, but not too much. But in Second Life, you can move the building, you can reposition it, you can take it down and put up another building in that spot very quickly and easily. I also believe that virtual world librarianship is a new strain of librarianship. It is like bricks and mortar librarianship. I gave a talk last week and I made this slip. I said I call them bricks and mortar librarianship. And I kind of like that as a Freudian slip. So bricks and mortar librarianship with some interesting new aspects. For example, events and exhibits seem to be more important than collections and collection building for libraries in virtual environments. So try to think about what would a library be like heading on out here if events and exhibits are the raison d'etre of that particular library and not collections and collection building. I also think that we're seeing a lot of interesting interaction already between librarianship in virtual environments with other types of cultural institutions, such as museums and art galleries, and even theme parks, amusement parks. Some of the design of rides and amusement parks may be very pertinent to how we think about information experiences in virtual environments. As I have observed elsewhere, the development of virtual world librarianship in the last 2.5 years, I'm increasingly haunted by memories of the emergence of the web. I remember distinctly, initially, many librarians poo-pooing the web. It was too disorganized, they said, or it was just a form of vanity publishing. And then the pornographers and the retailers discovered the web, which further chilled the progress of librarianship on the web. And I think as a result, for several years there, as the web started to emerge, we dawdled to our detriment. Libraries came rather late to the web in a big way, it seems to me, my recollection of that is. And as a result, I firmly believe that, for example, Google would not be the fifth largest capitalized company in America if we had dived into the web sooner. I think we sort of got beaten to the punch on a lot of information architecture things on the web because we didn't embrace the web early enough as a profession. Let's not make that same mistake twice. Through the leadership of early pioneers, individual librarians from around the world, some pioneering organizations such as the Alliance Library System in Illinois, librarianship, it seems to me, is in a much better position today vis-a-vis virtual worlds than it was in the early years of the web. We are, however, at a critical juncture right now. We must expand and broaden library involvement in virtual worlds. We've made a good start. We've got a toehold in these virtual worlds, but I think we need to now press forward and broaden and expand our presence in these virtual worlds. There are indeed some problems that we must address. Collectively, we are slow to realize and exploit the real potential of new technology. I'm talking about all human beings now, not just librarians. The wisdom of the crowd eventually will out about technologies, but it's a slow process. I suspect that we still do not fully understand how virtual worlds will affect the human enterprise, but I think that's okay. Rather than use that fact as an excuse to adopt a wait-and-see attitude, I think we should continue with bold experiments in multiple virtual worlds. And I think we have commonly had this situation with a lot of technologies. One of the examples I really like to use is the interstate highway system. When that was being proposed and discussed under the Eisenhower administration back in the 1950s, it was presented to the American public as a defense initiative. It was a way to move troops around the country in case the Soviet Union attacked us. And if someone back then had said, and maybe some voices in the wilderness did say, no, the interstate highway system is really about it's going to change the way our cities develop. It's going to change race relations. It's going to change the way we eat. It's going to change the way we vacation. It's going to transform. It's going to cause migrations to the southern, south, and west states. I think people said, you're crazy. This is just a defense initiative. So it takes us a while to sort of understand what any new technology is really about, what it really enables us to do. And I think we're in that current situation now with virtual worlds. So let's ask the question, how can librarianship develop a presence in virtual worlds? As I've already said, events and exhibits drive traffic in Second Life. If you only build it, they probably will not come. And the other thing we need to consider is, who is the competition in the race to develop presences in virtual worlds? Are real-world libraries and library-related organizations competing against each other to gain as large a share of the limited pie as possible? I actually think not. I think we've seen the enemy, and they are us. There are two things worth considering here. First, I wonder if organizations that were born and raised in the real world, or even on the web, already have two strikes against them as they try to develop a presence in one or more virtual worlds. Real-world-based organizations bring all this baggage and all these assumptions with us to virtual worlds that may actually thwart our attempts to establish a presence here. Organizations that were born virtual in a virtual world may actually fare much better because they are not burdened by that organizational baggage. Look briefly at history. Think about Microsoft and IBM. When the personal computer came out, IBM was an established major corporation. Microsoft was just a gleam in Bill Gates' eyes. But Microsoft beat out IBM in the race to establish a strong presence in the early years of personal computing. In the same way, I think Google beat out Microsoft in the race to establish a strong presence and application presence in the early years of the web. So I think the lesson from history here is that organizations that grow up in this new environment, whether it's the web or virtual environments, probably already have a head start against other organizations, established organizations, that are trying to come into a new environment and develop a presence there. So I think that we may see some upstart virtual world companies and library-related organizations may actually beat other contenders in the presence race. The other thing worth considering when we think about building a presence for libraries in virtual worlds is that perhaps the real struggle here is not organization against organization, but against organization against versus loose configurations of professionals donating their time and talent. Much of the work done by librarians in Second Life to date has been done by people working during their leisure time, not during organizational work time. I have suggested that the outpouring of professional time and talent by librarians in Second Life and other virtual worlds in the past 2.5 years is the greatest donation of professional talent in a non-emergency situation in the history of the world. If you can prove me wrong, I'd love to know it, but I just can't think of another situation where a professional group, whether it was health professionals, educational professionals, library professionals, any other kind of profession, has donated so much time and talent in a non-emergency situation to a new initiative. It's been absolutely amazing. The number of personnel hours put into building all this things that you'll see around in the Information Archipelago and elsewhere in Second Life that were done by libraries and library-related organizations is truly amazing. Now, this grassroots, donated, pro bono type of activity may eventually morph into something else. Or professional work in virtual worlds may continue to be not anti-organizational, but just a-organizational. That's really something that's kind of interesting. And when you think about open source software development and other communities where they don't really have that kind of organizational, strong organizational presence that we typically think of in a major effort, seem to be doing just well, just fine, and perfectly well. So maybe the work of libraries in virtual worlds may not sort of take that organizational stamp that we've come to accept in the real world. I'll just throw that idea out there. Now, another thing I want to address in my opening remarks here to kind of set the tone for the day is, you know, there are a lot of detractors to virtual world librarianship. They ask the basic question, what's the big deal here? Many librarians do not see virtual worlds as a big deal. They do not see virtual world librarianship as a bold, hardy new strain of librarianship. They don't see it as a place where most library users want to use the library. They see it primarily as a bunch of people who like to tinker, flirt, and dress their Barbie and Ken dolls to look like very purdy and buff. And we've all seen and read and heard these comments. However, I want to suggest that something indeed profound is happening here. First, we may experience a sea change in how people think about and use information. Let me try to explain briefly. Right now, up until about, you know, today, information seeking and use has been very object-oriented. We search for articles and books of interest. We make interlibrary loan requests to have specific documents sent to us. We download and save files from the Internet ad nauseum with a vengeance, legally and illegally. We build information storage and retrieval systems that instill in end users the same object-oriented attitude towards information. Our information systems and the way we think about information is so object-oriented that it's often hard for us to step back and say, is that the only way we could think about information? I think there is a different way to think about information, and I think that virtual worlds are sort of pointing us in that direction. Virtual worlds may be less about the object-oriented retrieval and use of information and more about creating compelling, immersive information experiences. In Second Life, you can experience a tsunami firsthand. You can interact with sculpture in ways that make you a co-creator of the final total experience. You can walk into the haunting Ray Bradbury novel, Fahrenheit 451. There's all kinds of very interesting information experiences that are already available here in Second Life. What we may be witnessing here is the dawning of the third wave of human learning. In the first wave, which lasted quite a while and continues to this day, it's the experiential learning in the real world, the proverbial school of hard knocks. Learning via the school of hard knocks is very effective and persistent. When you touch a hot stove, you learn quickly to avoid that experience, and that knowledge will remain with you until you die. The problem with the school of hard knocks is that it is a very limited curriculum. As an individual human being, there's only so much I can experience. So we invented book learning, which is, I call, vicarious learning. Rather than conduct research and study various aspects of the universe, we read about what others have done. Through the amazing body of creative literature that has grown up through the world, we can stand outside ourselves and experience what other people think and feel. The problem with book learning is that compared to the school of hard knocks, retention can be a problem. Also, that mode of interacting with information, frankly, is a bit thin, as in two-dimensional. When you're reading a book, a typical print-based book, you really are interacting with it as a two-dimensional object. the human imagination can work wonders with that two-dimensional interaction with printed documents and documents on your screen, but the only human imagination can only go so far, up to a certain point. I think virtual worlds offer this amazing opportunity to develop a third type of learning that blends the better aspects of both the school of hard knocks and of book learning. When I was in library school many years ago, over two decades ago, I worked part-time as a cook in a restaurant bar that had live entertainment on the weekends. One group that often played there had a song with the refrain, "I joined the revolution, but I don't trust you guys." And I often think about that refrain. I think there's some profound wisdom in that refrain to that song. I don't even know the name of the song. If anybody out there knows the name of that song that has the refrain, "I joined the revolution, but I don't trust you guys," let me know. I'd love to go back and read the entire lyrics. But as I speak to you this morning briefly, so glowingly about librarianship and learning in virtual worlds, you may be humming that refrain to yourself. You may want to join the revolution, but you don't trust these guys. This all may sound great, but it involves a tremendous amount of risk and trust. Let me just mention one thing that has sort of rocked that world of trust recently. Recently, Linden Lab, the company that sort of built the platform that makes Second Life possible, raised its price in the monthly maintenance fees on all this virtual land that's out here. And it's a huge amount of virtual land that's been built. Most library-related projects in Second Life are done on amazingly low budgets, often with soft funding from grants, donations, rental fees, and other sources of revenue. The announcement has rocked the library and educational communities in Second Life. We may have to go beyond Second Life and start to explore other virtual worlds. And some libraries already are exploring other virtual worlds to see what's out there. Time will tell what the long-term effects are will have on librarianship and virtual world. I hope it doesn't affect librarianship overall. So here's some ideas that I've thrown out. I see it's 8:23, Second Life time, so I'm going to wrap up here so we have a little bit of time for discussion. Enjoy today's reports and thought-provoking presentations. Second Life may well go the way of Gopher, but I firmly believe that the human experience of information, the astounding learning opportunities that combine the best of the school of hard knocks and book learning, and the reweaving of fun back into work and learning via what we now call virtual worlds will continue indefinitely. And this is just a start, and our children and grandchildren and our great-great-grandchildren will probably laugh at not only the way we dressed and composed our avatars, but also the way that we thought about virtual worlds in these early years. So we're at the beginning of a great adventure for humanity, and I thank you all today for attending this symposium. I'm going to open it up now for questions and comments, and I'll try to scroll back through here and see if anybody has anything, or you can retype them into text chat. It looks like maybe the local chat is the main channel here, and the ALA VW MIG going on over there as well. I'm going to, if anybody has any questions or comments, let me know. We're going to try to have at least a few minutes break between speakers so that Radio Real can set up the audio for each talk. And so we'll have a few minutes break here, but we do have maybe a few minutes for comments and questions if anybody has something. Okay, looks like Epona has a question. Go ahead, Epona. Andrew, yeah, go ahead and use local if you want to. That's the one I'm kind of trying to keep my eye on. Okay, Epona's comment is that a negative response she's got is that young people do not perceive Second Life as cool, that Second Life demographics are more middle-aged people. What I know of the Second Life demographics is that it's pretty balanced between men and women. I've heard within the past month that actually women spend more time in Second Life than men do. A little bit, you know, it might be like 55 to 45 or something like that, or 53 to 47. Yeah, the demographics is, I think it's about mid-30s is the average age of a person who is in Second Life. But I also heard that that median age has actually started to go down now. So, but I think the bigger issue here is that younger people who sort of, you know, we're sort of getting the born virtual generation coming up now, where we're all virtual immigrants, immigrants to these virtual worlds. Other people, the younger people, will be newer, sort of grow up in these virtual environments. They expect more. They expect more, and they're more into games, I think, than into sort of open-ended environments like this, where you can do anything you want. There's been a whole long debate about whether or not Second Life is a game. Early on, I sort of came down on the side of, no, it's not a game, unless you want to call life itself a game. There just aren't that many rules. They aren't that hidebound. You can't really, you know, achieve a higher status by slaying dragons and doing other daring do deeds. So I don't think Second Life is a game per se. But the downside of that is you don't have those kind of rules and that structure that you get in some of those other online virtual reality games. And you don't get the kind of reward system that you – it's more – Second Life is more like real life, where it has a subtle but profound reward system, I would say. Adra asked that young kids are in virtual worlds, but teens are not as much. True. I know that young virtual worlds for young kids is a huge business. And one of the things that saddens me as I kind of look at some of those worlds for preteens is that so many of them are really driven by commercial interests. They're really almost like marketing vehicles for a particular brand or a particular product. And I hope that we see some virtual worlds start to emerge and that are popular that aren't so heavily commercial and heavily branded, because I think that that's just going to affect the way these kids growing up think about virtual worlds in a negative way. Okay, maybe, Gabrielle, I think we should wrap up. I see it's 8:28, and we'll just take a few minutes break, and then we'll come back, and our next speaker is going to be Sonia Morgan, talking about public and rural libraries. So settle in, everybody. Get up and dance a jig if you want to, and we'll get started here in another couple minutes. Thanks.
Hello there, everybody. This is Gabrielle Real, and we are running the ALA Symposium here on Radio Real. I'm going to return you to a brief break of music while we prepare to bring the next speaker to the stage. We'll have Sonia Morgan here in just a minute. Now, feel free to discuss things amongst yourselves and some of the concepts that Tom just spoke about in the local chat, but we are going to continue on schedule. If you need a schedule for the speakers and the topics today, please send me, Gabrielle Real, an IM, and I will drop you a note card of the schedule of today's events. So let's take a bit of a break, and we'll be bringing Sonia on air in just a moment.
Okay, welcome
Hello
back,
once
everybody.
again, everybody. This is Gabrielle Real on Radio Real. And we are moving along in the American Library Association Symposium here. We have our next presenter preparing to come on air, and Tom will be introducing her in just a moment. But I did want to let you all know that I am recording this entire symposium as well as the audio presentations that you're hearing. And in the next week or so, I'll be posting podcasts of, or probably one large podcast of this entire event on Radio Real's website. The Radio Real website is radioreal.org. That's RADIOREL.org. And we'll have an audio recording all packaged up nicely if you'd like to listen to this in the future. So I'm going to go ahead and pass the microphone back over to Tom for our next presenter.
Thanks, Gabrielle. It's Tom Peters, just turning out his speakers a little bit there. Our next speaker is Sonia Morgan from the Mark and Emily Turner Memorial Library somewhere in Maine, Sonia could tell us, and she's going to speak about public and rural library activities in Second Life. So welcome, Sonia.
Thank you. It's great to see so many people here. First of all, there's a couple of behind-the-scenes people that helped this morning at the last minute, and I'd like to thank them. Jarhead Euler is one. He's in real life, he's an IT person at a homeless shelter in North Carolina, and Jarhead set up a lot of the boards that you see, the schedule and TP boards. So thank you to him, and Soup Johnson, who volunteered at the last minute to be a greeter for everybody. So thank you to them. I am a public library director. I have worked in rural libraries since 1992, and my name is Sonia Plummer Morgan. And I'm a library director in Presque Isle, Maine, which is way up by the Canadian border and is very, very rural. I've worked in Moab, Utah as a library director and assistant director, and I've worked in a school library. I've worked in children's services for about 5 years, and then most currently library director and department head. My public library career is entirely based on rural services, and that's really where my heart lies, and rural communities. I have a graduate degree from the University of South Carolina in their Master's in Library Science program, and I got that degree almost entirely online. I've been in Second Life since October of 2007, and actually was exposed to this virtual world after attending a conference in Columbus, Ohio, and heard a fabulous speaker named Stephen Abram. He's a futurist and a writer, and he spoke about the need for librarians to be leaders of technology instead of followers of technology. And in his presentation, he mentioned Second Life. So I went away from that conference that was put on by the Association for Rural and Small Libraries, went away with the feeling that I really had an obligation to check into the virtual environment. Once I did, I could see its utility right away. And what I mean by that is that rural librarians, rural anybody, any profession, it's pretty much a given that we feel some isolation from the rest of our colleagues or peers. And I see Second Life, and did right away see Second Life as a way to mitigate the rural isolation that people feel. And got my library involved with the Alliance Library System. My purpose for coming into Second Life and bringing my library in Second Life is was twofold. It's expanded exponentially, but initially it was to network with others and to get some experience as a reference librarian in a virtual environment, essentially conducting reference interviews. What I found when I created my library is that there were already hundreds of librarians here. And I think the last count is something like 1,000 self-professed librarians in Second Life. And what they're doing here was what I found to be exactly what I wanted, and that was doing virtual reference, talking about library methodology, planning events together, and our missions intersected. So it made good sense that I was here with my library for those reasons. The other reasons, aside from mitigating rural isolation, and there's lots of ways to do that, one is to get involved in events. We are here together in a way to collaborate and to talk about library issues, and it's probably pretty unlikely that we would ever be able to sit in a room together like this in real life. So already I'm sitting up in Northern Maine and you're in your respective real life places and we're able to have this conversation. This is an amazing thing for rural and public librarians to be able to connect with others in this way and to learn professionally in this way. The other reason for being in Second Life as a rural librarian is to broaden your user base. Certainly in my community, the out-migration is substantial. And for me to build a user base, I only have so many from whom I can draw. With involvement in Second Life, what I have essentially done is that I am serving a much broader audience. That is important professionally, but it's also important to my community that my community has visibility, that people in my community can connect with others from all over. And so the broadening that user base is extremely important if we're talking about sustainability. I have some concerns about the profession, some big concerns about the profession and its sustainability. And it's not that I feel doom and gloom about librarianship, but I do feel that we are, as Stephen Abrams talked about almost over a year ago, is that we are following technology and not leading it. Now, the way I think we can help combat that and sustain our profession is by saying we will be experimenting with technology and looking at technology and being the ones to introduce technology to our patrons. I don't want a patron to come to me and tell me about a technology that has been around for 5 years, for example. That's going to happen because I can't possibly keep ahead of everything. But the idea that librarians as leaders, we are natural leaders, and we, in our profession, it is important that we show those leadership skills. One of the other strong things about Second Life, public libraries, and rural librarians is that we form extremely strong professional relationships. At any point in time, I can log into Second Life and talk to people from anywhere in the world. And one example is my friend Ham, who is living in the Gaza Strip, and she's also a librarian in Gaza. This is something that probably I would never have experienced if I hadn't come into Second Life. And what I find with librarians from all over the world is that we have different issues, but we have often the same issues that we are dealing with, and some of those intersect. Just as we have the same problems and our missions intersect, our solutions can also be applied. And we can talk about those things that are making our daily librarian life difficult and brainstorm together. The collaboration and networking, it extends in a couple of different areas. Certainly, we're working as a massive team in Second Life, working on a virtual reference, but we're also creating events, online book talks, we're having celebrations, we're exchanging information, and the collective body of knowledge that we have here is enormous. And one of the reasons why it's enormous is because librarians are coming not only from all over the world, but every type of librarian that you can imagine is here. Not only are we collaborating with librarians, but we're collaborating with professionals across the board, and they are helping us apply what they know to librarianship. That's an important thing to keep in mind. If we isolate ourselves, or we are already isolated in a rural environment, and we have an opportunity to collaborate with a professional, this venue is probably one of the best ways to do that. And the example that I give is that as we are managing our public libraries or our rural libraries or our academic libraries, we would be a sad place if we did not have other professionals helping us, and other professionals from which to draw their professional expertise from. Finally, what has changed for me professionally and personally is that my perception of librarianship has been turned upside down. I still do the day-to-day things that an administrator does. I set the budgets, I do events, I follow my mission statement. But I no longer define myself as simply a rural librarian or a public librarian. I define myself as a global librarian serving a global user base. For me, I now understand libraries across many different cultures, libraries across many different expertise, like law librarians, transportation librarians, and I'm able to work with them side by side. For me professionally, that's worth every bit of time that I spend here. And my patrons in real life benefit not only from the understanding and the knowledge that I gain from my colleagues from all over the world, but my patrons benefit from the huge number of collections that my colleagues, in particular the Alliance Virtual Library, has put together. I can draw. So in that case, this is somewhat like a huge database for my patrons when I have a real-life reference question. So I thank you for listening, and I guess now we can open it up for questions. If you have specific questions for me, I'm happy to answer, and thank you very much for listening.
Thanks, Sonia, very much. We unfortunately had some audio problems during your talk, and I think you might have the privileges to. There's a movie playing in, I think, on the screen behind the audience, that if you could turn it off or delete it, I think it would solve some of the audio problems that we're having. But thank you very much. And one question I had for you is, you mentioned right at near the end of your comments that you now think of yourself as a global librarian. And I see this as a huge problem for libraries. There are so few real-world global libraries out there that thinking about serving basically anybody in the world, is a little bit challenging for most libraries and library organizations. Do you think that's kind of where we're headed generally, is that we're going to sort of drop the idea that, oh, the people that live in this geographic area are my primary clientele or my sole clientele, and more toward, I'll serve anybody in the world who needs this library service?
Yeah, I really think that that global librarianship is going to be a direction that many librarians, one, are taking now, but two, are going to have to take. Many of us have to justify, for good or ill, we have to defend what we do by the numbers of people that we serve. And that quantifiable and that evidence-based research that comes from Second Life in who we are serving is absolutely going to be crucial. I don't necessarily think that every librarian is going to buy into the global librarianship concept. I think there are going to be many of us that makes our hearts sing. And if it makes our hearts sing to be part of the global service, then we need to really do that and grab hold of not just this world, not just this environmental world, but consider getting together and creating our own virtual worlds. It is an enormous task to actually think about. But when we think of librarians and our innate ability to lead and to digest information and relay information, then we have been doing that, creating databases and creating platforms from the very beginning of librarianship. So I do think, yes, that global librarianship is going to be much more prevalent in the next few years. And I have hope that that is going to be one way that people are going to be able to attend more conferences. People will be able to feel that they are members in many other organizations, library organizations, but also that sustainability of our profession, which I think we absolutely have to come up with a plan of action to sustain our profession. And when I say sustain, I don't mean keep it the same. I mean sustain our profession so that librarians continue to be the leaders in our profession.
Thanks, Sonia. And Carolina Keats typed in the text chat that she thinks it's a very pertinent observation, and she notes that Pat Thibodeau, the former Medical Library Association president and director of the Duke University Medical Library, has stated that librarians basically are anarchists because we all have had to be focused on local populations. So I think it's a huge challenge for librarianship as a whole. I live in a rural area myself, or kind of an ex-urban area in Missouri. And another question I have for you is the infrastructure for getting high-speed internet access out to rural populations in the U.S. I think is falling behind. It's not advancing as quickly as I think us out in the boonies would like to have it happen. So. Do you see anything happening that's going to provide high-speed internet access to most or all of the rural population, people out in the rural areas that want to have access to high-speed internet access?
Well, I think that's there again in our rural communities where librarians can step up and say, if, for instance, my broadband is really great in my library, that's where we can say, we understand that there's a broadband issue in rural areas. This is why we have the public library, and get people to come in and make our libraries, set up our libraries to help bridge that gap between the people that do not have broadband and cannot connect to virtual worlds. I think the infrastructure needs to change, and I've seen lots of really good minds working on that to get broadband to more and more areas. I think the other problem, Second Life in particular, is that the software is not bundled. We need to get an open source Second Life. We need to get it so that more people can load it onto their computers. So, yeah, I think that is a major, a critical failure factor. I think if we acknowledge it, we use our libraries, we focus our attention on getting people into the library and getting people to use the library computers in rural areas, and making sure that we are advocating for enough computers in our rural libraries. And I think that will help. It's not going to be the panacea, but I do think that will help.
And this idea that librarianship needs to go more global, I think people are really running with this idea. Librarian Luminos types in here that when we limit ourselves to just understanding the physical local communities, we actually limit the services we can provide to our physical local communities. So I think that's a great point. And, I think the whole idea of community is kind of evolving, too, as we get farther into the web-based communities and also now virtual world communities. And Carolina Keats also observes that we have a hard time evolving best practices across the profession when we're all, some of them refer to libraries as fiefdoms, because we all serve a very small, most of us serve very small populations compared to the global population. Audra Latov points out that we don't have efficient ways to share research and best practices. So I think that the camaraderie and sharing of expertise among librarians from around the world in the first couple of years here of strong library presence in Second Life has been truly amazing, don't you agree?
Yeah, the collective knowledge and skill set in Second Life continues to beggar my imagination. At any point in time, and here's where I think might be something to keep in mind when we are talking to our local officials, when we're talking to our library boards, is that Second Life is a piece of software. I look at it as a database. I look at it as a place for professional training. I look at it as a place to participate in conferences. I think one of the things that we can talk to our local people is that at any point in time, I might have a friend on my list here that is a law librarian. I might have a friend on my list that's an academic librarian. So questions that would be outside of my professional purview, I have a lifeline to some other expertise. I have a lifeline to other professionals. Now, there have been many instances in my real-life library where I have, or my staff have, a real-life reference question that I did not know. I know where to go in Second Life to find that resource, and I can use it. One example is genealogy. We have some terrific genealogy collections here. We have some terrific legal collections here. Any genre of literature imaginable is here. So I look at Second Life, and when I ask for funding for Second Life, I don't ask for funding for a game, for a virtual world. I ask for funding for an electronic resource and a piece of software. And I look at it as a tool. Second Life is an advanced tool for librarians to use. And that's how I talk about Second Life, is that it is a database, it is a resource. That is what people hear. They hear that and they understand that we are not here simply
at the door, I think, for Sonia.
Yeah.
Okay, we're getting to wrap up, but one other question I see here that Epona Bookmite, great avatar name, asks, what do you say to high-level university administrators who say the campus library must focus on its primary patrons, faculty, students, and staff? Maybe we can talk about that a little bit more in the research library section, but I think it kind of touches on that. You know, now a lot of libraries are defined, they define their primary clientele in a very tight way. And often they'll see if they open up their services, people will come in from all over the world and use their services. And I think it's a real point of friction, if you will, between how a library defines its primary clientele and what its actual clientele would be, could be, if it opened up its services to the worldwide audience. What are your thoughts?
Yes, and I do presentations on Second Life all over the country. I do them to a variety of different audiences. One of the things that speaks the loudest to administrators is who's already here. And you got to do your homework. You got to find out what universities are here and what they're doing, what associations are here and what they're doing. Do your homework, because before you talk to administrators, and for good or ill, monkey see, monkey do sort of thing, in that if an administrator sees, oh, well, the University of South Carolina is here. Oh, well, SJSU is here. Oh, well, okay, they've bought into this concept. That is where we are really obligated to do our homework first, to find out who is in Second Life and to give those examples. And that's going to be that evidence-based research that administrators will hear.
Okay, thanks very much. We've been listening to Sonia Morgan from the Mark and Emily Turner Memorial Library in Maine. We're going to take another just a couple-minute break while we shift around here, and our next speaker will be Tina Coleman from ALA. So hold on, everybody. Thanks.
Hi there. It's Gabrielle Real back, and we're going to be switching to some music while we bring Tina Coleman up here on stage. She's Kay Tyroff in Second Life for the next presentation right here at the top of the hour. If you have a problem with the audio and you're listening inside of Second Life, the Second Life client is a little... oh, I don't want to use the word bug. It can be a little difficult sometimes with audio. So if you lose it during this transition, all you have to do is turn the audio off and then bring it back on, and you should reconnect to the audio. Also, if you're having problems with the audio from inside of Second Life, I highly recommend that you listen with a media player outside of Second Life, and you can send me, Gabrielle Real, an IM about that. So we'll bring Tina up here and be starting in just a moment. Good morning once again, everybody. This is Gabrielle Real, and I'm broadcasting live on Radio Real for the American Library Association Symposium. And we have just brought Kay Tyroff to the stage. She'll be speaking next for us, and I'm going to hand the microphone back over to Tom.
Thanks, Gabrielle. So it's indeed my pleasure to introduce Tina Coleman from ALA. I'm not even sure what her title is. But I see that she can levitate here beside me, so I feel totally inadequate, as usual. Tina's going to be talking about library associations in Second Life, especially what the American Library Association is doing. And this is the first of the talks we'll have. This not directly about libraries per se, but library-related organizations. So welcome, Tina.
Tina, are you there?
There's sorry, I'm getting a little bit of lag. Good morning, everybody. I, as Tom mentioned, I'm Tina Coleman. I work with the American Library Association. I'm the membership specialist in the member development area of the American Library Association. I am getting a little bit of conference chat lag, so if I seem a little out of it, that's exactly why. And I am going to be talking about library associations and associations in Second Life and the things that basically the things that all of my library colleagues are doing. I wanted to start out by reiterating some of the points that Tom and Sonia have already made about Second Life being a useful tool and really be a and really being a good really being a good resource for sorry, one moment. I'm having technical difficulties. Okay, sorry, I'm going to go ahead and continue. Second Life, I'm finding that Second Life, through my work with the American Library Association, I'm finding that Second Life is a great tool for networking, and it's actually just kind of an extension of the Web 2.0 and social networking trend that is going on at the moment. So I think that that's especially for inexperienced users of Second Life, this is a good kind of approach. So really kind of Second Life has been useful for us, the American Library Association, for networking and community building and really kind of reaching out to members. And we've really had a lot of success with that. So that's kind of just a reiteration of points that have already made by previous speakers. One of the first things that I want to touch on is kind of the difference of how associations have been working. How associations have been working in Second Life and how that's different than how libraries have been working in Second Life. The biggest difference, I think, is that associations have responsibilities to their members, which is different because all of you librarians that are doing work in Second Life have responsibilities to your patrons. So the things that we have been concentrating on, and I suspect has been kind of the thread to any of the other library associations, any of the other library associations in Second Life, is the things that you can get out to your members has been really resources for quick turnaround of resources, information, ideas. There's been a lot of going on with education and continuing education and just events and social networking for the community, for the library community. So as Sonia had mentioned, this is a very this symposium in itself is very unique in the sense that I'm sitting here in my living room in Chicago. Tom is elsewhere off on the grid, and there are people from several different countries and several different states across the U.S. here, and we're able to gather here because of this environment. So just that alone, when you factor in the ideas that there's continuing education involved, or Missouri sounds lovely. When you consider that you can apply that exact thing to not just continuing education, but a quick meeting that might take weeks to schedule and tons of dollars to actually get in get everyone into the same place and coordinating schedules and phones and all of that. And then plus you have the technical aspects. This is a very unique kind of environment to be able to offer that. So just that alone in terms of offering that service to just to be able to offer that service to members, that's kind of a huge deal. So then the other thing that the associations have to keep in mind is that we're also responsible for helping all of you librarians getting the word out to the public. Since we have an open, ALA has an open island, and a lot of associations have open open sims and open presences, having that aspect to outreach to your patrons and outreach to other users beyond your direct patrons. That's kind of a huge deal too. Being able to get your message out and just act as a resounding, a resonator of your message. That's another thing that associations have been able to be useful for. That kind of begs the question then of who's in. Just quick research for me has brought attention that state associations are starting to come in. California, Kansas, I know that Illinois School Library Media Association is here. And I think that's growing. I've heard that Maine might be coming in and more states are coming in. Then there's also other library associations. Of course, the Special Library Association is in, and of course ALA is in. We also have new types of associations and new networks coming up, like Alliance Library System and the Virtual World Library Association. These are things that hadn't been here, and networks that are now available to more libraries. We also have other partners in Second Life and nonprofits, like ISTE is here, and there's a lot of universities and consortiums that are starting to come in as well. So these are all partners and larger networks that, as librarians and other library associations, that we can all sort of reach out to and increase our web. This, of course, leads then to the question of what are people doing? What are all of these associations doing? The biggest thing, of course, is programming. There's programming that libraries are offering that is directed to the public. There's, of course, tons of book talks, book discussions, author talks, and continuing education for investment advice. And there's any given time when you do a search in events, you can usually find some sort of thing that's going on that's hooked into the library world. The associations that are here have a very important role to play in these programming for the libraries, the librarians themselves. Not only can associations offer space for any events or events that are also directed towards the public, but we can also offer support for the librarians themselves. That's one of the big focuses that ALA has had. We've opened the island up for campaigns like Banned Books Week and National Library Week have been the two biggest campaigns that we've run in Second Life at the moment. So we really kind of opened the door for Banned Books Week and tried to offer programming that would be of use to not only librarians to repurpose out into their libraries or invite people to attend on ALA Island, but we've also tried to have those events that are going to appeal to the public as well. National Library Week, we did the same thing. We had discussions about gaming in libraries, and we had discussions about censorship in libraries. We fully expect to continue those types of campaigns and bringing those in. But then the other thing that we've also been able to talk about is obviously what the virtual communities and libraries member interest group has been doing. This symposium is a great example of one of the things that an association can kind of get behind and support the community. As this grows, then we also have the MIG also sponsors the table talks, and we'll be doing our at the midwinter ALA meeting, we'll be doing our MIG meeting is going to be on site in Denver as well as in the virtual world, which is going to be new for ALA and sort of almost test driving that kind of aspect. And there are ideas being tossed around too about how we can leverage conferences in Second Life. So it's all a big growing. I think that associations, library associations, I should say, are just starting to really be pressed into looking at what Second Life and virtual worlds and virtual communities can really start offering for members, and how we can leverage things in the virtual communities for our members in a better way. And how to really make that an asset. So those are the ideas that ALA are working on at the moment. This kind of gives me kind of a chance to go into a sidebar, and I know that Tom had touched on this as well, but the idea, since I know that quite a few of you are new to Second Life and setting up libraries and ideas for Second Life, I did want to talk a little bit about, since ALA has had a presence here now for a year, about what works and what doesn't work from the association standpoint. I think that one of the things that pretty much any presence, but especially a presence that's going to be used by such a large cross-section, an association presence in Second Life really kind of needs to be useful to several different kinds of people and several different kinds of activities or events at any given moment. So you need to be able to think about that as you're planning your space. And space planning is probably the most important thing that ALA has done in Second Life. Anytime that we've done anything that has required new building, that's always been one of our primary concerns. The most important things that I found is that you need to be open to using the 3D environment. Don't think in boxes. One of the worst things that ALA initially did in Second Life was we had a large open area with just a high-rise building, which looked a little too much like our headquarters on Huron in Chicago. It was boring and nobody came, and it was really hard to plan events. So open and unique areas are always going to succeed better in Second Life. If people want to see how you did something or want to see why something is fun or play with the build, then yes, Max, you could fly right up to those upper floors, but that's hardly as much fun as how the ALA Island turned out now. The ALA Island, which I hope that all of you will at some point take a chance to take a spin around the island. We have some lovely stuff, including the build that we did for Banned Books Week. We created a whole little town village that has a bunch of side references to banned books, and we have a soapbox that you can get on. We have statues, and we have a library, and it, the I hope that everybody will try and take a tour around the ALA Island in Second Life, just because, you know, it kind of now is a very good representation of not only how virtual space can be used, but also it's a better representation. I know that one of the best things that Tom has ever told me is that the ALA Island is in some ways a better representation of the ALA and how complex the different associations work together and the complex relationships that we have. It's almost a better reference for that than the building that we have in real life on Huron. So that's kind of the very last and best piece of advice that I think I can offer in terms of building a space is that one of the most important things that you do is you have to create a sense of space. Your area should have a unique feel, and it should have that feeling of a place, even in a virtual sense. And that's pretty much, I think that's pretty much all I have in terms of the way of advice and how I think that associations have been, library associations have been working in SL. And I'm kind of do a little bit better with questions. So if you guys want to fire out some questions, I think I saw some in chat.
Okay, thanks, Tina. One question that Librarian Luminos asks is, and this is a big question, I'll throw out to you, and what he or she wants to know is, what strides are we making as to how we attend to the Second Life virtual representation of knowledge objects, also known as books? And so, you know, how we present knowledge objects, and what I suggest it might be trending towards knowledge experiences, is a huge question, but I don't know if you want to have a stab at that, Tina.
I'm sorry, Tom, can you kind of repeat the summary of the question? I'm having a little bit, I'm getting so much chat lag, it's hard to hear.
Librarian Luminos was asking about how we as librarians are, what advances we are making on how we sort of present knowledge, whether it's in a book-like object or note cards or all the different ways that you can present knowledge in Second Life, and wondering what advances are we making.
Okay, I think I understand that. Second Life offers as much avenues for getting information out to people as your imagination will allow, which is one of the great things about Second Life. If you can think of a way to 3D build an abstract concept, then you can go. If you want to put that into a note card as well, that's another way to get the information out. Yes, Bradbury Island is actually, and Land of Lincoln and any of those builds, those are really good examples of creating a sense of place that is very informational, but still very engaging and fun and interactive, which is kind of the most important part in terms of retaining the information. But there's also note cards, and there's videos, and there's audio streams and podcasts, and really, really, that's kind of the one of the beauties of the idea of a virtual world, is that you have all of these different ways that you can get the information over, that you can combine in any way that you want.
Okay, so then Sunshine Seagal asks another question about space and how it builds a community. I know that you guys have done a lot of planning and thought about developing ALA Island as a place. And so let's just talk about place and space and building a sense of virtual community. And I'll put in a plug for the Salon Huron little corner of ALA Island, and you also have like a membership lounge, and you've just got you find some very interesting spaces where different kinds of interaction can occur, correct?
Yes, that's actually one of the ways that creating space in Second Life is actually very closely related to creating community, since you're dealing with a 3D environment. One of the ways that we've worked on that is by creating, like Tom said, we have different areas of the island that are designated for basically just various types of discussion groups. We have Salon Huron, where we have our table talks every week on Thursdays. There's a new table talk, and these are kind of more structured discussion groups that are then open to everybody. You don't have to be a member to be there. Then we also have things like the member lounge, where anybody can come and usually Val, one of our library workers, Val Hawkins, actually hangs out there and answers questions as she as she can. So she's willing to kind of direct people, give out landmarks, and but there's also spaces to sit and talk. We also have our storytelling garden, which is a great build, and it creates a good sense of whimsy, and it's a very comfortable place to kind of just chill out, and you can talk to other librarians that happen to be there. You can listen to whatever streaming story time we have going at the moment.
Okay, then I think this is scrolling by too quickly for me even, but I noticed that there's been a little bit of discussion here among the participants about the fact that Second Life often is, let me put it this way. A lot of times when people come into Second Life, they expect to be dropped into like midtown Manhattan. And they end up being dropped into something more like the Australian Outback. No offense to the Australian Outback, but it's just in a way, it's sort of a sparsely populated environment. And people tend to congregate like we are today in certain locations, but you can walk across a lot of sins in Second Life and not encounter another avatar during your rambles or your walkabout. It's a problem what I call the reverse frontier, where it's so easy to create land that the land mass might be growing faster than the population. I think with Linen Lab's recent changes in pricing structure, we'll see maybe a change in there, where we might see a shrinkage of the land mass with perhaps not a related shrinkage in population. But what are your thoughts about this idea that people come and they say, well, where is everybody? There's nobody here. And how do you develop a sense of community when it's really only events where you get this kind of crowd that we're seeing here today?
I think that actually, Tom, you answered that question earlier when you said just because you build it doesn't mean that they'll come. The short answer is that in the beginning, you have to have a bunch of events. You have to invite people over to your house to make sure that you have a regular group of people coming over to your house. And you'd be surprised in Second Life how fast that happens. People will, if you have new content and new ideas and new things to share at a regular interval, then people will come regularly. It will become a habit. Exactly. Advertise it and they will come. Crawl is exactly the right thing. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to add a new book discussion every week or a new complete build every month. But I mean, even if you're just offering new note cards or new reading lists, something that will bring people over, discussion groups really kind of run themselves after a certain point. So as you start getting your regular crowd, think of it like on Friends when they hung out at Central Perk. That's kind of what you're trying to create, that Central Perk couch. You just kind of have to in the beginning, make it easy. And making it easy to come in world is more appealing. I know that one of the things that people complain about is the learning curve. And while there is a steep learning curve, it's relatively short. I've always kind of insisted that if you take the time the week to acclimate yourself to Second Life, by the end of the week, you should be able to get around and not feel too out of the ordinary when you're engaging, especially if you're doing things like, you know, just trying to get from place to place and sitting around and discussing things. So I hope that answers the question in terms of how to build a community. really kind of events and interesting builds are the ways that you build, are the two primary ways that, that you can build a build a community.
Yeah, and I think that based on what I see in the picture here is that, yeah, sort of new avatar orientation and assimilation is something I think that virtual worlds need to work on in general. That it's, and I remember when I came into Second Life, I was totally disoriented, and you know, if I had a few friends that already in that I knew were in there to help me along, it would have been very frustrating, I think. And a lot of what we read in the popular press and some in the library literature too, and maybe the blogosphere, is people, you know, I kind of joke about it, but it's like they say, oh, I spent 10 minutes in Second Life, and boy, what a waste of time. you know, and I always want to respond and say, you can't just spend 10 minutes. You have to, you know, you have to invest a certain amount of time to become acclimated.
Yes, you really do.
Thanks, Tina. We're coming up on the 9:30 mark, so we're going to try to stay on schedule. Again, you know the routine now, folks. We're going to take a couple minutes break here while we switch gears on the audio front, and then we'll be back on with our next speaker, Carrie Kent from Harvard University. Hold on, please.
Thank you. I did just want to say, if anybody has any other questions for me about ALA, or if there's any other way that I can help, or if you want more information about how to get involved with the virtual communities and libraries, Meg, just send me a private IM or drop down a note card on me, and I'll get in touch. Thanks.
Thanks, Tina.
Okay, everybody. This is Gabrielle Real once again on Radio Real. It's 9:30 Second Life time. We're going to be bringing Carrie Pinnell on here in just a moment. I did want to announce that starting in the next couple of minutes, we will have Carrie's presentation. Her topic is Academic Libraries and Second Life. We were also scheduled to have F.T. Takix from the University of South Carolina present as well, but FT has been trapped in travel mode returning to the United States from Thailand. So unfortunately we will not have FT's presentation, but we will be hearing from Carrie here in the next few moments. We'll have some time for questions and answers for her. And then after Carrie finishes up, it will be break time, and we'll be taking a break from, well, whenever we finish with Carrie until 11 a.m. Second Life time. And that break time will give you a chance to network a bit with some of the people here, or go grab some real-life sustenance, whatever works for you. So be bringing Carrie on here in just one moment. Hello once again, everybody. This is Gabrielle Real, and I am here broadcasting the American Library Association Symposium on Radio Real. We are now ready to have our next presenter come up, and she has joined us here on stage, Carrie Pinnell. And welcome. I'll pass the microphone back over to Tom.
Thanks, Gabrielle. Welcome back, everybody. Carrie Kent, that's her real-life name, has worked in academic libraries for almost 30 years at the Massachusetts Institute for Technology, Brandeis University, Harvard's Cabot Science Library. For the past 20 years, she's worked at Harvard's Widener Library. For most of those 20 years, she was the creator and then administrator of the Research Services Department. But a year and a half ago, she dropped out of administration to be a research librarian in the same department, GO, with special assignments at Harvard's Linguistic Department and its Community on Ethnic Studies. Now she is heading Harvard College Library's Second Life project. In Second Life itself, she works with Professor Brian Carter at the University of Central Missouri, not too far from where I'm sitting, on the libraries in virtual Harlem and Montmartre. She works with Harvard faculty members and students at iCommons Island, and she experiments with library exhibits of digital collections on Cyberry City 2. So she's very active in Second Life, and welcome, Carrie.
Thank you, Tom. I guess it's funny, I don't think of myself as being that active, although I am here a lot. What's interesting about being associated with Second Life is that for the first time in many years, I find myself talking about academic libraries all the time. And all the talk is about the use of this particular technology that takes our flat page presence into this 3D, this or other 3D worlds. I should admit, however, that I don't have a lot of answers about what it is that academic libraries should be doing here. For librarians in the public sector, I think finding a professional mission in Second Life or other 3D environments is somewhat more straightforward. But academic libraries' missions specifically relate to the universities and colleges that we work for. We, like public libraries, are service organizations, but we in particular service our students and faculties and the collections that support their research, teaching, and learning. Our work lives are directed by the pedagogy and research of our faculty. So, given that context, what can academic libraries do here? There are, in fact, an increasing number of academic libraries that have presences here, but as I talk to people, I find that there are many people who are struggling with what our mission here should, in fact, be beyond being simply a 3D placeholder for what we might be doing in the future. About 6 months ago, the Harvard College Library asked that I create a presence here for it in Second Life. And I found in so doing that I was spending most of my time here in Second Life asking questions. In fact, I often tell people when they ask what my library is, that my library is a question. And here are some of the questions that I ponder. First, our open digital collections are available on the web so that anyone with a computer can access them. Why are we considering moving access into a place that some people, without a change in equipment and some training, cannot go? Another question is, that's right, attribute that to me. Anyway, why should anyone want to access my online catalog or Google or email in Second Life when they are on a computer anyway? Widener Research Services offers reference services, as do many of your libraries. We still have two very active reference and information desks. We use email, we use IM, and we use the phone. And even, we still answer written letters that come in from the United States Post Office, if any of you remember that place. So why, with all of that, would we offer service here? We at Harvard know from an IT study done of Harvard undergraduates that less than 1% of them have used Second Life, and not a whole lot of them have used even World of Warcraft. So why here? It seems like a silly idea, maybe. Well, then there's exhibits. Okay, we can do exhibits here. But Harvard's Women at Work collection, for instance, you can all get open access to it on the web. So once again, why am I going to hand that to you here? and research instruction, which is what we call bibliographic instruction. Don't even get me started on that one. Why would we do that here? Teach research in linguistics, EndNote, RefWorks? I ask these and other questions so often, I think people are getting tired of me asking them. But it's a funny thing about asking questions. Sometimes just the asking and the discussion that takes place becomes the answer. I'm thinking about a Sunday afternoon 2 weeks ago, sitting in my Second Life library with J.J. Drinkwater, Saldana Barbosa, and Leslie Weston, talking for an hour about digital collections in Kanabula and their uses here. Or I stand with a Harvard faculty member who in real life is sitting in an apartment in Rome. She's a late medievalist, and we talk for hours about digital collections, a way she might use in Kanabula here, being interrupted periodically by one of her graduate students who came online to find her in her Second Life office. Or I talk on IAM with Brian Carter. We argue. Now, Brian does not argue. I argue on what I can or cannot do under the rubric of academic fair use of copyrighted materials. But he's in Paris or Hungary or Missouri. I talk and talk and talk to other librarians, to faculty members from Harvard and other schools, to students, to technologists. What have I found out? Do I have any answers? Or are we just here because we think we should be? Is this all just a gimmick? And believe me, I do not have time for gimmicks. First, the biggest surprise is the issue about service. I never thought, no matter how, you know, and I'm a big proponent of Second Life, but I never thought I'd be delivering service to the Harvard community here. But I am. I am through my discussions with faculty and graduate students. One day I was sitting on my real-life Widener information desk, and a graduate student who I've talked to for several years, both as an undergraduate and now a graduate student, walked up to me and began telling me what he was up to. He then asked me what I was doing, and I told him about my Second Life project. What? You're here? Great. I can talk to you there and not have to come to the library just to find you. He's been in for a while because his professor is here. And my research conversations with faculty as we talk about projects they want to run in SL, that is, after all, referenced. Second, the next biggest surprise, will I teach here? I have more than one medievalist talking with me about teaching in Second Life. With some, we talk about possible projects, NEH grants, pedagogies, access, training students for Second Life. Others, I'm more actively engaged in helping, like, for instance, bringing in and perfecting the presentations of some Islamic manuscripts, or helping with some of our more frustrating Second Life presentation mechanisms. Does this constitute research instruction? Well, even if it is not yet with a class, it is certainly consultative teaching. Next, exhibits, and oh, how exciting they can be here. I've just spent a week bent over a hot URL loader for the Indigenous art exhibit that Tamu O and I have completed for Information Island. And it's all about context, listening to music, looking at images, reading, perusing web pages in the media browser, and yes, drumming and dancing, a small immersive experience. I am also currently working on the possibility of using some early Audubon drawings that Harvard owns in an exhibit here. Imagine that. The contextual presentation of pictures, Audubon's pictures of birds. Next, after listening to Sonia talking about networking and the isolation of rural librarians, let me assure you that even working in Boston metropolitan area with all of our libraries, that even working at Harvard University where we have at last count over 500 librarians, the professional and personal networking possibilities here are astounding. I have met smart and interesting people that I would never have met and never have had the opportunity to work with. Another interesting thing I have learned relates to the creation of research guides, you know, traditional bibliographic work, which we all still do. We do a lot of this at Widener for the academic departments that we are assigned to. We create flat page web guides, course-related guides, guides in the framed and layered iSight platform. But can we produce research guides here in this 3D world? My work in Virtual Harlem begins to tell me that yes, we can. rooms to walk into, books to click on, portraits that take you through to sites, and certainly in the context of working with inexperienced undergraduates, it is much easier to understand the why of Zora Neale Hurston's importance when you can, by standing in one place, read a text, a biographical entry, look at some manuscripts of the Library of Congress, all standing in the Harlem of the 1920s and 30s. I recently spent some time in real life with the head tutor for Harvard's Department of Linguistics. I'm finishing up a large in-depth research guide for that department, and Keith was looking at it, giving me suggestions. He knew about my work in Second Life. He'd gone and seen the virtual Harlem Library. And at the end of our session over the guy, he turned to me and sadly said, "I wish this would work in a 3D environment." And of course it wouldn't. Which brings me to my final point, something that our friend Pathfinder Lyndon said to me recently. This is one technological tool, and it does not fill every need. Sometimes we just need a flat web page. But this place, this magical place, this fun place, can help us in many of our projects, in many of our pedagogy, and we are barely beginning to understand how much help it can be. We are all participating in a grand experiment, my friends. So, as I walk through this world, if we meet, do not be surprised if I ask you a question. And that's all I have to say. Do you have questions?
Thank you very much, Carrie. That's wonderful.
I haven't been following the local chat. Were there a lot of questions that people listed?
A lot of comments going on. I have a question for you. We've touched on the fun factor, and I sort of suggested that we're really looking at a major shift in the way we think about fun and experience fun. What are your thoughts about fun and how it relates to work and learning in virtual worlds?
I will tell you that I absolutely agree with you on that one. I think that, it's something that I very much experienced, and I experienced it quite poignantly, because as I gave up my administration, I came into Second Life, and I had spent 20 years as a beleaguered administrator and finally sort of said, we're going to let somebody else do that, and came here just about at the same time, and it was an astounding experience for me to suddenly be not only, meeting new people and engaged in interesting experiments, but to suddenly, find a whole community of librarians that were, willing to say, yes, we are doing very serious things here, but we are also becoming friends and having fun and going to art exhibits and dancing, yes, stall dancing. But, I think that it's a very important factor, and it is sadly, unfortunately, I think a factor that convinces some more conservative people or untechnological people that all we do, it's sort of like the old adage about reference librarians only sitting at reference desk reading newspapers. Well, of course, we were always reading newspapers because everything we do contributes to our being a reference librarian. Well, you know what having fun here contributes to. So I agree.
Yeah, okay. I see there's some questions about virtual Harlem. So you want to just give your little elevator talk about virtual Harlem and what's all
my
going
what?
On there?
My little, what,
little
it, what it is?
Talk. Yeah, what it is.
Okay, Virtual Harlem and Virtual Montmartre are two immersive sims that were, I shouldn't say they were created by Brian, but they are the brainchild of a man named Professor Brian Carter from Central Missouri University. Brian actually has been engaged with using virtual technologies for over 10 years, trying to find ways to give the uninitiated student an immersive experience. And there's a book now called, I believe it's called Configuring History, that is written about his first project, which was using the old VR, the old helmet-based VR technologies. But a couple of years ago, he discovered Second Life and decided that this was the place to try and do this. And he routinely brings in several classes a semester now. And he has finally gotten his librarians very involved, and he has a couple of librarians that are actually doing teaching, research instruction with his students in world and out of world. As one of them told me, the computing lab is right near the reference desk. They go in there, and then they come out to the desk, and there stands the librarian that they were just talking to in Second Life. So there's a real nice integration there, and I think that's ideal. I mean, I've had that experience with a few graduate students, and I think that it's an interesting. So it's a very, you should all visit it, Virtual Harlem and Virtual Harlem 2. It's a community that in some ways struggles because he's always struggling for funding, but he's always looking for people to help. I know Tamu Al-O and I have both been working at different times in different parts of it, and we are, in fact, looking for someone to handle the virtual Montmartre collection. So anyone who's got some fluency in French, we would love to have you help. Was that a good plug?
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Thanks. And then I see that back at the 9:45 mark, Chadron Wybrow, great name, not a highbrow, Wybrow. I want to be a Wybrow. he or she writes, I find that lots of libraries and organizations are developing Second Life presences, but in a vacuum, alone.
Yeah.
How can our organization reach out to these new groups as they come online, capture them, so to speak, and bring them together? I think this is a great question. What are your thoughts?
I'm sorry, I missed the last part of it. So this is in a vacuum from each other or from their
communities? Yeah, they just sort of come in and they sort of try to build their organizational presence, but how can organizations that are already further along that happy path of developing a virtual presence in Second Life or another virtual world, how can they identify these newbie organizations, if you will, and reach out to them and sort of help them along?
Well, that's an interesting question. I know that the Information Island web presence has a list of libraries, but and it does include libraries that are not in the archipelago itself, but you can get a list of the academic presences there. However, it does mean that, for instance, a library like mine, because I'm connected with people and new to do it, I got Stahl to, at least I think it was Stahl, to put notice of my library up on that list, and people could find it there. I don't know if people use that list, but I do know that I get lots of visitors that are clearly librarians, and my guess is that's where they're coming from. I also think that, you know, I mean, I'm a great proponent of going over to the Information Island Reference Desk and standing in a meeting and talking to people, and I've gotten to know most of my colleagues that way, Stahl and Sonia and a lot of other people, Dorothy, Daisy Blue. And so, I mean, I think that that's something that if you know of people that are coming in to keep an eye on that and go over there when there are people standing there, because, frankly, I think that's kind of informal networking and communication is perhaps the most useful thing. How I could reach out to people, that would be, I think that's how I meet new people, is by standing there. I don't have time to sort of go out and troll around and looking for people to assist, but I'd be more than happy. I mean, that's the great thing about Second Life is that, you know, I think everyone I've ever met here is anxious to, you know, offer expertise and scripts and stuff and you know, I mean, so yeah, I think, well, I'm not sure I'm answering your question well, but maybe other people have other ideas about how to get together. I personally don't tend to be a big a person who goes to a lot of association meetings here, only because of my time restraints. So I am a member of ACRL in Second Life, but I don't actually go to the meetings because I'm too busy. But people do that certainly.
Yeah, and then I'm trying to follow the text chat stream here, too, and people are asking about, you know, they don't want to reinvent the wheel. Can we have our students visit other college virtual library places? And I'd say by all means, most of them are open, as some people have pointed out, that you can go. And, you know, just by going around and looking at the way the space is built out and things that you like about certain places and things that you don't like about certain places, I would say explore around, do a walkabout and talk to people. Like you say, someone said it's like a water cooler. It's like the invisible college made visible in three dimensions. There's just a lot of networking, and you just ask around. It's amazing how quickly you can get in touch with the people that know how to do that.
Yeah, and there's so many people who are doing different. I mean, I have a lot of different library bills, and I do different kinds of things all the time. Some of my like the library in Virtual Harlem, I didn't actually build a building, but working on the interior looks like a library. Whereas my college, my Harvard library, and the build I did for Virtual Montmartre, they do not look like libraries. Although they're filled with library icons, and there are other people who want, you know, something that looks much more recognizable. So there's a lot of thought going on about library's place. In fact, JJ and I hope to be doing a poster session at ACRL on library's place and what that means and how much it means to people and when it means what to people. And so I think these are really, really important questions. And they're important questions in real life, too. But in real life, of course, we are to a certain degree stuck with bricks and mortar. But you and I and everyone else in this room, this place knows that, you know, we carry the library with us wherever we go. And how do we express that? And this is a place that we can express that, that we can take that interior portion of our brain and build it and have people come.
Yeah. And that reminds me that I think that there's a real future in peripatetic librarianship in Second Life, where you can just sort of like ask me a question or I'm a librarian over your head and walk around. And I think you're going to provide a lot of service just by walking around a peripatetic librarianship. You heard it here first. And then Kate Farrell typed in, it's a real let's put on a show crowd. And I'm thinking about Mickey Rooney, but Mickey Rooney. And, let's put on a show kind of a crowd. But, you know, I think the serious point here is that I've been able to connect with people actually outside of librarianship in Second Life that I bet if I call them up in real life, they wouldn't give me the time of day. And so you can connect with people in organizations that you probably would never be able to connect with in real life. And I don't know if that's just like the early, you know, kind of wildcat years of virtual worlds, but my advice is make hay while the sun shines.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I think that some of it I think is just knowing. I mean, I know, for instance, you know, I'm at Harvard and everyone says, Harvard, you know, and I wouldn't call Harvard and this, you know, but it's funny how many times when somebody calls me from another institution or I call them and identify where they am and I get that reaction and then they find out that, you know, I'm going to talk to them. Not only that, they have information that I need or I have information that they need and we share it. And I think that there's huge, I just, for this exhibit that Tomo and I have been working on, I mean, I had gotten direct contact with a bunch of artists in the Pacific Northwest that I've admired for years and just sent them email, you know, and they answered me back. And I think that these technologies assist us in helping us recognize that we can do that. It used to be that we didn't do it, not just because, but we couldn't do it in some reasonable way. So I think it does open doors that, you know, that weren't shut, but we didn't know how to walk through them.
Okay, I see that Vienna James just typed in a question. I think libraries are not publicizing themselves in Second Life, I assume, because of the stigma associated with Second Life. The it used to be sex and gambling, and now it's just sex. Is that true? Do you think that how is Harvard dealing with that issue?
That's a very good question because my library has not been even announced to my organization. Now, I'm an old hand at Harvard, which means, you know, if somebody gives me the opportunity to fly under the radar, I take it. I am more known here as a librarian in Second Life, here in Second Life, than I am at Harvard, although somebody did refer to me recently as the Second Life librarian, which meant I broke out in hives. But I think that there is stigma. I think that stigma is beginning to fall away as we get newer administrators in who are willing to sort of look at not just this technology, but all technologies. We have a new administrator who's over my head, and that's made a huge difference. She was the one who asked me for a proposal to do this and then approved it and has, you know, expects to be kept and made a film of one of my HCL librarians, you know, that she's shown around various and sundry places. So some of it is just giving it time. I think that it's, and I have recently found a whole bunch of Harvard librarians that have been hiding the fact that they were in Second Life, and they suddenly are beginning to pop up. I had Sonia had a Harvard College Library poet, Stephen Real, do a reading at the Reader's Garden a couple of weeks ago, and this brought out a whole lot of people, Harvard people from the woodwork, who heard about Steve doing this and were excited and came and saw him. And it was interesting suddenly talking to these people who'd been in world, some of them longer than I, and I didn't know it. So there is a stigma, and I think we just have to give it time. And do serious work. I mean, do serious work and have fun. And then ha-ha on them, you know? I mean, we're the ones having the fun, you know?
That's right. They need to come and dance with us.
Yeah.
Pamela asked the question, how do you get young librarian professionals involved? And I guess my quick answer would be, we didn't ask for ages of the register today, but I got a sense that we have some younger folks attending and newer librarians attending just today's event, which I think is a good thing. But overall, how do you think young library professionals are getting involved in virtual world development?
I certainly don't see that at Harvard, although I do have some younger people in the department who are interested. Some of it is that, I think Tom would agree with this, is that the younger somebody is, the more weighed down they may be with young families. And I mean, I know I've got two kids. You've got kids, Tom. You know how hard that is. So some of it's that their real life, you know, balancing real life pressures with the pressures of, you know, huge pressures of personal lives is difficult. And it's difficult with my kids. My son is just, oh God, she's going to Second Life again. And he's 15 year old. He thinks Second Life is stupid. And he spends hours on Facebook, oddly. I mean, but you know, I see in graduate students, we get more graduate students involved. And that's the population that I have seen very responsive at Harvard. That they, in fact, I've had it up and running on my desktop or in the teaching room, and a graduate student I don't know from an unknown department walks by and sees it, and they come in, oh my God, that Second Life, would you show me? I mean, it's been really, that's happened multiple times. So I think that they get out of college and they have all the isolation of graduate studentism, and suddenly they see this as a great place. So it's going to take time.
Yeah, so we're at the top of the hour again. I want to thank again Carrie Kent from Harvard University for sharing with us her thoughts and a little bit of her experience in Second Life. We are now going to take an hour-long break, so we will reconvene at 11 a.m. Second Life time. The Second Life time, Pacific Standard Time, is listed in the upper right-hand corner of your screen there in the Second Life interface. Great. So we're going to take a break, and we'll reconvene in an hour. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks so much, everybody.
And this is Gabrielle Real once again. It is indeed 10 a.m. Second Life time, and you are listening to the ALA Symposium live on Radio Real. I'm going to switch over to some music here, and we will have a break for an hour. The presentations will start back up again at 11 a.m. Second Life time, and we will be hearing from Carol Perryman, the coordinator of Health Info Island, about special libraries in Second Life. So thank you all so much for being here, and we'll see you back here in an hour.